afternoon to everyone. How's conference going? Good? My name is Scott Hillier. This is my contact information up here. For those of you that haven't been in a session I've done already this week, feel free to use that email address if you have some follow-up questions to anything that we do here. But this afternoon, we're here to talk about Sandbox Solutions. Sandbox Solutions, here's our agenda for Sandbox Solutions, all written as questions, because when you run into Sandbox Solutions for the very first time, you're just full of questions about what are they, why do I need them, what exactly is it that I'm allowed to do inside of a Sandbox Solution. And so as we go through the presentation, if you've never seen this technology before, if you're relatively new to some of these concepts, these questions will undoubtedly just come up in your head as I show you things, and you'll say, oh, wait a second, what about this, what about that? So the best way to go through this material is really just to kind of sit back and enjoy the ride and know that all these questions are going to get answered as we go along. To lay the groundwork then, let's talk a little bit about our relationship as developers with IT pros. So I'm kind of blinded by the lights here, but show of hands of any IT pros in the room. I see any. There's one who's willing to admit it back there, maybe a couple. All right, so Sandbox Solutions really is about the relationship of the SharePoint developer to the IT pro. And so here are some things listed that we do to IT pros to get them upset with us. First of all, we ask them to change the farm production level, trust level to full. So we go, well, I don't know, the solution was working in my development environment. I don't know why it's not working in production. Perhaps if we remove security, it'll work. Ask them to make hand edits to the web.conf config file. So probably one of the biggest complaints I hear from IT pros is that we're in the middle of a giant rollout of customizations to SharePoint, and then I get this laundry list of edits that I have to make in the web.conf config file, and then I mess one of them up somewhere, and now the farm's down, and we all have to stop and figure out what happened there. Forget to compile your production code in release mode. Believe it or not, people actually forget to do this. I had an experience once where a developer forgot to use release mode, and inside their debug code, they had a debug stop. And what happened was it stopped right in the middle of production, and the entire farm came down. And the little dialog box that you had to push the OK button on to keep processing, it was there, but it was on one of the SharePoint server boxes, and nobody could see it. So nobody understood why the farm had completely stopped, but there was a dialog box waiting for somebody to push the OK button on. Forget to run SP dispose check against your assemblies before deployment. I think one of the painful lessons that all SharePoint developers have learned over the last product cycle is that we can leak memory. So if we're not careful about how we use SP site objects, SP web objects, and indeed a host of other collections and objects inside of SharePoint, we can leak memory. So the SP dispose check is designed to help us find those memory leaks. Typically, though, I still find that the way these memory leaks are discovered is by the IT pro going through his or her log files and seeing memory leak errors inside the logs. And then, of course, what happens is they come back to the development staff and they say, hey, we've got these memory leaks showing up inside the logs, so everybody look at your code and tell me whose fault this is. And then almost immediately the answers come back, not mine, not mine. I don't know, not mine, going home, see you later, right? And the poor IT pros are left there all weekend trying to figure out what's going on. And finally, tell them everything has to go in the GAC. So again, everything I need, you know, everything I'm doing in my SharePoint solution needs full trust. Don't tell me I can't touch anything. Touch all the databases, all the web services I want. And so the challenge with all of these things is not only in our relationship with the IT pros that we work with, but all of these things have the ability to destabilize the farm. And certainly in the work that I've done, I've seen all of these time and again. And then what happens is, if you think about what happens here in these all these scenarios, the developer is able to create something that destabilizes the farm, but it's not the developer that gets the call, right? What happens is the IT pro gets the call. So the IT pro gets the call on Friday night. The CEO can't see her task list on the dashboard page. So guess what? Somebody's going to have to come in on the weekend and fix that. So the IT pros come in, but not being able to figure out whose solution it is and not being developers themselves or understanding necessarily what went wrong, what they do is what IT pros know how to do. They rebuild the SSP. because at least we're doing something. So we rebuild the SSP, and then the next thing you know, search doesn't work, profile import doesn't work, and it goes from bad to worse. And then people start saying, I don't know about that SharePoint. I don't think it really works right. It's too hard to maintain. So all of these things really are what we're targeting with Sandbox Solutions. We're trying to get better about all these different areas. So when it comes to thinking about Sandbox Solutions and really why we need them, right, if we think about the perspective for us as developers, what we're really interested in is complete agility. So what we don't want to be held down. We want to be able to create whatever it is that we need to create in our solutions. So don't tell me I can't touch things. Don't tell me I have to worry about security or what have you. Of course, on the other end of the spectrum, the IT pro's perfect world is totally secure and stable, right? So it's that old joke that says, my systems would be perfect if it were not for the end users, right? So that is the perfect IT world, just a nice clean room data center type environment. Of course, neither one of these things are reality, right? And what we're after, of course, is something that's in the middle. And that middle is exactly where the sandbox comes into play. You like that graphic? We spent tons of money to get that little animated graphic right there, so had to use it. All right. So what kinds of solutions can I make inside the sandbox? Well, these are some of the types of SharePoint solutions that you can make that will run inside the sandbox. It's important to know that you can't create all SharePoint solutions in the sandbox. For example, a good example here is you can see we can do declarative workflows, but we can't do programmatic workflows. So we can do the workflows that we make in SPD, but not the workflows that we make in Visual Studio. But there is a long list of solutions that we can make inside of the sandbox. So part of our objective for this session is to understand what we can make in the sandbox and then what the workarounds are for things that are limited inside the sandbox. So I've said sandbox several times here. Exactly what is the sandbox? Well, here's your definition for the sandbox. First of all, the sandbox is a separate process. So it is a place other than W3WP where your process runs. And that's one of the reasons that it's going to really add to farm stability, because we're going to be able to take your SharePoint solution and put it someplace else besides the farm. And if it should act up, if it's going to misbehave, then it's not going to take down the farm. It's going to take down this isolated process. Or better still, we're simply going to be able to shut it down if it misbehaves. It also exposes a subset of the Microsoft.SharePoint namespace. This is important because we're not allowed to talk to all of the classes in the Microsoft.SharePoint namespace, just a subset of them. This is why a lot of the solutions that you want to make won't run in the sandbox, because you're simply not going to be able to talk to portions of the object model that you want to talk to. You're also under serious code access security policy limitations. Essentially, these limitations are going to keep you from being able to talk to any external system from a sandbox solution. So the idea here at first blush, at least the starting point, is complete isolation of the solution. So it runs in and of itself, and again, if it misbehaves, we'll be able to shut it down. There's also a site collection solution gallery for deployment. So this is separate from the central admin gallery that we're all used to. There's a new place to deploy these solution packages into the site collection. Central admin, on the other hand, is used for managing and monitoring, so the IT pros are still sitting on top of this whole thing. It's just that they don't have to worry about the nitty-gritty of what went wrong. Their tools are primarily there to help stabilize the farm. Okay, so I said it was a separate process. Actually, there are three processes involved, and here are the processes. The user code service, SPUC host service, the worker process, SPUC worker process, and the sandbox worker process proxy, SPUC worker process proxy. The user code service is the primary service that runs in order for the servers within the farm to communicate and manage the build-up and tear-down of the various sandbox solutions. So one of the things you're going to see is that the servers in the farm can't play in the sandbox unless they have this user code service running. The sandbox worker process itself, this is actually where your solution runs. So this is the separate process that it runs inside of. Your solution is loaded into SPUC worker process. It'll execute there and be managed there. Lest I forget to mention it, this is the process that you would attach to if you wanted to debug. So if you've deployed into the sandbox, you can debug from Visual Studio by attaching to this process. And finally, the Sandbox Worker Process Proxy is the proxy that's used to communicate. Now, let me explain this a little bit more. So we should know by now that in SharePoint 2010, we've done away with the single shared service provider model, right? And what we have is this a la carte service provider. And so we can create all the different services that we need, search, profile import, metadata, are all separate. And then they can be used in the farm a la carte. So you can choose to consume them from different farms. You can choose which services you want to consume, that type of thing. Well, the Sandbox solution system uses exactly the same structure. So it uses the same infrastructure. So we have a Sandbox worker process proxy that's responsible for the communication from the web front end to wherever the Sandbox solution is running. We'll see more about that as we go along. So these are the big three that you're going to see in the processes. We also said it was a subset of the Microsoft.SharePoint namespace. This is the subset. So this slide actually answers many questions about what types of solutions you can create, because if your classes aren't on this list, you cannot call them from the Sandbox. Okay? So you can see, for example, we don't have access to anything really outside of the SP site. So that's an important distinction as well, is that we're primarily targeting things at the site collection and below. You're not going to be, for example, getting an SP farm object from the Sandbox. You're really talking about things that deal with the site collection on down. We also said there were serious code access security policy restrictions. These are the three code access security policies that apply to a solution in the Sandbox. Specifically, if we look at securitypermission.execution, basically securitypermission.execution gives your application the right to load into memory. So that's what's going to allow us to actually start up. ASP.NET hosting permission level equals minimal. That's just like having minimal set in your web.config. Basically, that means that your application that got loaded into memory can't call anything. So you're not going after any databases. You're not going after any web services, right? We know that the default web.config is minimal for SharePoint, and that shuts down databases and WCF and all those other things. Well, now that's true for anything running inside the Sandbox. And finally, the SharePoint permission.object model allows you to call the SharePoint object model. That's what that CAS policy does. However, you're under the restrictions of the fact that you can't call everything. So rather than calling directly to the SharePoint assemblies, there's actually something called the object model subset proxy, which is what your Sandbox solution really calls, and it exposes only a portion of the real set of namespaces that of classes in the namespace that are in the assembly. So there's kind of a little shim between you and SharePoint that keeps you from calling everything, even though you have permissions to call the SharePoint object model. Now, if you're sitting here and you listen to all these restrictions that you get, right, your first reaction might be, I'm not writing any Sandbox solutions because you can't do anything. Hey, Scott, you know how many things I have to do that require database access, WCF access? You know, this is just too restrictive. So I can do like a little smiley face web part and that's it, right? And if that were the case, then we'd be all done. The session would be over and we could just decide this wasn't worth our time. But one of the key things that we're going to try to do is we're going to look at the ways that we can get out of the Sandbox. And one of the primary ways that we can get out of the Sandbox is by creating something called a fully trusted proxy class. A fully trusted proxy class is going to be deployed into the GAC, and we're going to be able to make calls to that proxy class from the Sandbox. So we'll look at that in a little bit more detail as we go along, but I think that at this point, the key thing to understand is that we have a couple of different techniques for, quote, getting out of the Sandbox, and that's why we really should care about this, because we're going to be able to take advantage of the stability that this infrastructure has to offer while getting out of the Sandbox when it's necessary for us to do so. I mentioned already that there's a solution gallery. So this solution gallery is a new solution gallery located at the site collection level. It is managed by the site collection admin, not IT, not central admin. So basically what it means, if you're the site collection administrator, you can now add WSP files to your site collection. You can bring in packages all on your own without anybody else's permission. Don't need IT to do it. And then I said solution administration. So the role of the site collection administrator is to manage what applications will run in their site collection. The role now of the IT folks is to manage at the central admin level and just really manage the whole infrastructure. So they can set boundaries for us, rules, shut down applications that are misbehaving, those types of things. Okay, so let's take a look at some basics here. All right, I'm going to come into Visual Studio, and let's start off by creating a new project. So what I'm going to do is just come over here to the File menu and say File, New, Project. And when I do that, of course, you're used to seeing we now have these wonderful integrated tools inside of Visual Studio 2010. And I can just select a SharePoint 2010 project here. And we'll just go ahead and pick a blank project just to make it easy right here. And sure, we can leave that. Let's just change where I'm putting it. Otherwise, I won't remember when the demo's over to go clean this up. So I've got a little folder here for Sandbox Solutions. And we'll just put it in there. Okay, great. And click OK. And then when I do, up pops this wizard that you've probably seen before that says, hey, what do you want to do? Do you want to deploy this as a sandbox solution, or do you want to deploy this as a farm solution? Now, it's very important to understand what exactly you're being asked here. The first thing to understand is you can change this choice later, and I'm going to show you that. So this is not something that's set in stone, and you have to blow away your whole project to change. But it's also important to understand exactly what's being asked here. Essentially, what you're being asked is which of the galleries do you want to target? So the only thing this really is affecting is that when you do the deploy step from Visual Studio, it determines whether or not the WSP package that you create is going to go into the central admin gallery or it's going to go into the site collection gallery. That's pretty much the only thing that changes here. And so this is a really important point to drive home with the developers, is that there's really no difference between a sandbox solution and a regular farm solution. It's simply a matter of the restrictions your solution is under. So if you write a sandbox solution that calls ADO.net, for example, you can write that solution. You can compile that solution. You can successfully deploy that solution. When that code gets called, it's going to fail because you're under restrictions, code access security policy restrictions that say you can't make that call. So you're simply going to throw a CAS policy error when you do it. If you take the exact same solution and deploy it into central admin, then it's going to run. Okay, so there's really no difference in how you code them. It's just a matter of the restrictions you're under. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is let's go ahead and just bounce out of this real quick, and I'm going to pull up a pre-baked project that we can take a look at. Okay, so here's a project, very simple project. It's a declarative project that is designed to add a new action to the site actions menu. So you'll recognize that we're using a custom action element here, and the custom action element has a group ID of site actions and a location of Microsoft SharePoint standard menu. And basically, this is the magic goo that says I want to add this to the site actions menu. And then here's the URL that we want to go to when it's clicked. So basically, what we're going to do is add something to the site actions menu that, when clicked, we'll open the central administration site. All right, so this is a completely declarative solution. We have no code involved in it. That's all that's required right there. And if we come over here to the Solution Explorer and we click on our project, there are a couple of things to point out. First is the property down here that says Sandbox Solution. This is the property of the project that you're setting with the big wizard that pops up. You know, that big wizard pops up and it looks like it should be something really significant, but the bottom line is all you're doing is setting this value right here. And I can drop this thing down and change it anytime I want. So I can change it from false to true. I can change it from true to false. It gives me a verbose dialogue basically telling me all the things I should be afraid of when I change it from one to the other. But here we are. We've got it now set to true. The other thing that's important here that I just like to point out because it seems easy to miss is that in our case, we have no code, right? There's no code in this solution. So there's a property down here that you'll want to take advantage of as you do your SharePoint development called Include Assembly in Package. And if it's set to false, then the DLL that's associated with the project is not going to get packaged in the WSP. And that's exactly what we want, right? This is a completely declarative solution. So you can use this little trick to do things like just deploy images to the images directory if you want or what have you, or completely declarative solutions. Okay, so for us then, we've got ourselves a sandbox solution. We're not deploying the DLL. I'm going to come up here, right-click this thing. Let's try again. Right-click the project, and we'll simply select deploy. And when I do, it chugs for a second. We can see it's working down here. Adding the solution. Solution deployed. All done. Great. So let's come back here now to SharePoint, and we'll just go to the home page of our SharePoint portal here. Small delay while the page loads up for us. There we go. And we'll come over here to the Site Actions menu, drop it down. And sure enough, there's our central admin link. That looks nice. We go ahead and click on it. Chugs for a second. Open central admin. Great. It works exactly like we want it to work. Okay. And if I come down here now to the Site Actions menu, and we say let's go to Site Settings, and from Site Settings, I look in the Gallery section here, and we click on Solutions. I can click on Solutions, and that's going to take me to the Solution Gallery for this site collection, where we're going to see that we've got our central admin link installed. So when I targeted the sandbox, it went to the site collection level gallery. So this could have been done. I want to emphasize, this WSP simply could have been uploaded here by the site collection administrator. There's no big IT review required to make this happen. Okay, back to central admin, where all we'll do now is come into the sandbox solution property, and I'll change it from true to false. It warns me again about doing that. I say, great, thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and right-click this and say deploy. Do nothing different, but just deploy it again. And then you'll notice that the IIS application pool is being recycled, but it pretty much goes through and does all that. And the reason we care about the IIS application pool being recycled is because that means it's going to take another second or two for my page to load because I just dumped everything out of memory. But we'll go ahead and go back to the home page here and wait for a second. Getting there. Okay, and it looks like we're good. Let's go back to our Site Actions menu, drop it down, scroll down to this thing, and there it is. We still have our central admin link there. That's wonderful. It still works exactly the same way. Even better, if I go back now, and we drop down Site Actions, and we say Site Settings, and we go to the Solution Gallery for this site collection, lo and behold, it's no longer there. And the reason it's no longer there is that that WSP file was now moved off to the farm level solution gallery. But the point is, it worked exactly the same, right? And the reason it worked exactly the same way is that the solution I created was supported in both environments. So I didn't do anything in the sandbox that was disallowed. So my solution worked identically whether it was in the farm or whether it was in the sandbox. So what that means then is that you'll quite often want to know whether you're in the farm or you're in the sandbox. So I've got an example web part that shows us exactly that. So if we come here to the sandbox site, we'll see in the upper right-hand corner here I have this little detector web part. And this little detector web part is telling me the app domain. This is the ID of the app domain it's running in. And it's saying, I am currently outside the sandbox. So let's go ahead and open that up. This is actually a ridiculously easy trick, but a good one to know. Here's my Detect Sandbox project. So this is just a little web part. It's a non-visual web part, so everything's here inside this one code file. And if I open this thing up, you can see that basically what I'm looking for is I'm looking for the friendly name of the current app domain that this thing is running in. And if the friendly name happens to be this whole thing right here, then it's running inside the sandbox. That's the app domain that is running the sandbox. So now we can just go ahead and flip this. So we'll say, let's make this a sandbox solution now. Flip that to true. Redeploy it. Retracting the old solution, deploying the new, adding it. Okay, liked it. Everything was good. We're going to have to edit this page to drop the web part again because I broke it when I redeployed it, but that's okay. Come up here and delete the one we had. It's fine. Add the web part again. It's going to be in here in the custom folder. Detector part. Add that in. And stop editing. And we can see now that it says, hey, I'm operating inside the sandbox. So that's a pretty handy trick, right, when you write your applications, knowing they can be deployed in either place. It might be important to know exactly where you are, and then you can make decisions about how you're going to access external resources. Or perhaps you could make a decision that says, I don't want to run in the sandbox, or I don't want to run in the farm, and display a message saying so when you get deployed there. You get the idea. Okay, couple of other things to show here before we jump back to the slides. In Central Admin, I want to go to Central Admin, System Settings, Manage Services on this server. And this will show me all the different services that are running on this server. It's coming. There we go. And the one I want to point out is this one down here, Microsoft SharePoint Foundation Sandboxed Code Service. You can see it started. This is critical because this is the user code service. This must be running on your machine or that server cannot play in the sandbox. So imagine a farm, right, has many servers in it. Every server that wants to play in the sandbox has to have this running. This is the communication and provisioning mechanism for the entire system. This is normally off, so when you go into your SharePoint, you'll find this is off. So you got to flip this on to do just about anything that we're doing. Okay, let's jump back to the slides here. All right, so now what we're going to do is talk a little bit more about the architecture to help you understand what's going on here. I'm not a big fan of this PowerPoint slide, but attempts to rework it have not been too satisfactory either, so I prefer to just kind of explain it a little bit. On the left-hand side, you see it says front end. That's a web front end. That's easy. We all know what that is in a SharePoint farm. But on the right-hand side, you see this thing called back end, and that's not really a great title for that portion, but basically what that back end means is it means a server running the user code service. And the reason that we can't exactly say what that means is that in the sandbox solutions architecture, this thing called backend could be a web front end server. I have the ability to say that I would like the sandbox solution to run on the same server where the web request came in, or I can say that I would like to have it run on a group of servers that I have in some other place. But in any case, backend simply means I'm running the user code service. So what happens then is somebody makes a request on the front end, and then here we're saying that this is a legitimate request for the subset model, object model. So in other words, this is a sandbox solution that doesn't call anything it's not supposed to call. So they make a request on the web front end. And then what happens is, of course, that request goes through IIS, and then it goes through something called the execution manager. And the execution manager is a little piece of code in the app pool that dispatches requests out to the sandbox infrastructure and makes a call to SPUC host service. So that's why you have to be running that to play in the sandbox. And it makes a call out there and says, hey, you know, I want you to load up this sandbox solution for me and run it. So what happens is your untrusted code is going to run inside the SPUC worker process. It calls this thing called the subset object model proxy, but all of that's okay because you didn't use anything you weren't supposed to use, and the call succeeds and returns to the user. If, on the other hand, you made some request that used, say, SP Farm or SP Web Application or something else, still going to get the same thing. Execution Manager calls host services, and you're loaded into the worker process. But then when you try to make a call to either part of the object model or to database or web service you're not allowed to call, then it's going to simply fail, and you're just going to get a failure back as part of that call. Finally, there's another scenario where you could do something that's really misbehaving. So we call that the resource wasting call. Still get the same process, still runs back and loads your application into the worker service. But then you're sitting there doing something horrible, like just doing an endless loop here. And then after a certain period of time, you're just going to be shut down, right? So you get 60 seconds of non-responsive behavior, and then you're just going to be shut down. And all these limits, by the way, are adjustable through PowerShell. So you can see that that protects the farm, right? So that prevents somebody from creating a really bad web part, putting it on the home page of SharePoint where it gets hit by 80,000 people simultaneously and just brings everything to its knees. Okay, let's talk also a little bit about code access security. I already mentioned the three code access security policy restrictions that you are under and what they do to you. But it's also important to know that SharePoint itself has full trust when it's inside the sandbox. So when you think about creating your sandbox solution, I already said there's really no difference between writing a sandbox solution and writing a full trust or a farm level solution. It's just a matter of what happens during the execution time. So you can, inside of Visual Studio, you can set references to ADO.net. You can, you can set references to use Link and Entity Framework to talk to WCF. Visual Studio is not going to stop you from doing any of that stuff. The stopping all occurs here. But other things like SharePoint assemblies, they all still have full trust. So even though they're kind of in there with you in the sandbox to support you, all the SharePoint stuff can still do everything else that it needs to do. And in fact, in your solutions, you can pretty much set a reference to anything you want. The only thing that you're not allowed to do is you won't be able to set a reference to another sandbox solution. Sandbox solutions run in different app domains, and two of them will never run together. The way the system works is it has a pool of app domains, and when the requests come through, it just grabs the next app domain that's available and loads your application into that. So you're never going to have two sandbox solutions running together in the same app domain. Okay, so I'd mentioned already a little bit about this idea of a full trust proxy. And here we're going to talk about it in a little bit more detail. So we understand the basics of how we get into the sandbox and the restrictions it puts on us. So now what we want to do is find ways to work around that. So a full trust proxy, you see our little architectural diagram here. Over on your right, we have the GAC. And over on the left, we have the SPUC worker process where our sandbox solution is running. You can also see underneath the GAC that we have some kind of secured resource. So that's a database or a WCF service or what have you. So the way it works is that you're going to create two classes that inherit from the classes that you see here. So within the GAC, we have this thing called the SP Proxy Operations ARGS and the SP Proxy Operation. Essentially, the SP Proxy Operations ARGS gives you a class that lets you define arguments that you intend to pass into a method that's exposed by the SP Proxy Operation class. Both of these things go into the GAC, but over on the left, where you're looking at your untrusted code inside the sandbox, your solution is going to make an instance of the class that is inheriting from SP Proxy Operation ARGS, and then it's going to fill it with the arguments that you need to pass to the SP Proxy Operation. The way that you're going to call the SP Proxy Operation is by using the SP Utility class in SharePoint. So the SP Utility class is going to make the call for you, pass your arguments over to SP Proxy Operation. You can see that that's running in the GAC, so it has rights to do whatever it needs to do. It can call the database for us and then return some results back. So this is our first mechanism for breaking out of the sandbox, to create something that will run in the GAC and then go ahead and call it. Let's take a look at that. Okay, so we're going to go back to SharePoint here, and let's run the solution first, and then I'll show you how it was made. But it's a pretty simple one. All I've got is a web part here with a text box and a go button. And what we're going to do is call a database full of names. So I can type some partial thing in here, like the letter C, and then click go. And basically what it's going to do is run off to the server, and it's just going to do a wildcard query of the server. And you can see it's returning a bunch of names that start with C. Okay. So the point of this here is that this is a sandbox solution that is running and talking to a database. So even though we're not supposed to be able to do that, we are in fact doing it. Let's take a look at how that was done. Okay, so we said that there are two things that you need to create in order to build up the full trust proxy. The first one is the args, and the second one is the ops. So let's go into the args project first here. Go ahead and open that up and check out the code. Okay, so this is pretty simple here. You can see that I'm inheriting from SP proxy operations args. And then what I do is I have a string that's the partial last name. So basically what I'm doing is I'm just creating a class that's going to hold on to my argument for me. In this case, it's just the string that represents the wildcard search that I want to make. And then there's this get names proxy args. That's really the method that gets called that returns it, right? Sets it, right? All right, so out of this one, pretty simple one. Next is the operations. So bring up the operations one here. And here you can see that I'm inheriting from SP proxy operation, as I said that we needed to do. And the thing about SP proxy operation is it only has one method here. It's an execute method. And you can see that it takes an SP proxy operation args as an input, and it returns an object. So this is a very generic type of thing. Anything that you create that inherits from SP proxy operations arg, you can pass into this, and then it's going to give you back some kind of object out the back end. So if we look at the code that's running here, you can see that all I do, come in, make sure that it's not null, and then retrieve the proxy args right here. So this gives me back the arguments that were put into the instance of that class. Retrieve that partial last name, okay? And then the rest of the code is really just some link code running against entity framework. So I come in here and I say, okay, give me a context here. Here's my connection to the database. That's nice. And then here's my link query that I'm going to run. So I say, give me back all of the names where the last name starts with whatever the partial name is. Pretty straightforward. And then once I run my link query, I loop through the results and I build up a list of contact objects by just looping through everything that's here. And because I can return an object, I simply return the contacts back out. Now, before I can make any use of the args and the ops, I have to do two things. The args and the ops have to go into the GAC, so they need to be installed in the GAC, and then I have to tell SharePoint that the operation is trusted. So you can't just call it from the sandbox solution because it inherits from SP proxy operation. You have to actually tell SharePoint it's okay to do that. So we have a little program here that does the registering. And let's go ahead and look at that one. And you can see that all this is a simple command line program. But what we do is we go SP user code service, SP user code service local. So basically what this gets is the user code service that's running on this machine. And then what we do is we come in here and say, let's get and then add to the collection called proxy operation types. And we add the type information for that proxy operation that we want to call. You can see it's all there. This is all the type information, right? And then that registers that type as being safe to be called from within the sandbox. Now, let's step back for a second and think about a couple of things here. So first of all, registering and putting the args and ops in the GAC. I've got it broken out in this demo right here just to make it easy to show everybody as part of the demo. But the reality of how you would create these is that these should all be created as SharePoint features. And then somebody would go activate that feature at, say, the farm level. And activating at the farm level would install the args and ops into the GAC and register the operations as safe. So if you think about that, right, creating that feature as a farm level feature and somebody has to push the button to activate the farm level feature, well, who's going to do that? The answer is the IT pro running the farm, right? So here is where we need the buy-in from the IT pro. We're saying, listen, we have these things we want to put in the GAC. We have this farm level feature we want to create that's going to put something in the GAC. And, you know, here it is, and we, you know, we want your buy-in that it's okay to put this stuff in the global assembly cache. So the right way to think about that then is not that every SharePoint solution you create is going to have its own args and ops, and you sort of have to make them willy-nilly, one for everything I do, and there's dozens and dozens and dozens of these things in the GAC. Instead, what you want to think about is sort of an API that you're going to create, because once the args and ops are made, they can be called by any sandbox solution. So ideally, what you would want to do is sort of create an interface that allows you to access trusted resources in your organization. And if you think about it, this is a really good way to restrict the types of things that can happen. Today, in a SharePoint solution, if somebody says, well, I have to be in the GAC, right? My solution's got to be in the GAC because I need access to this. Well, when they go in the GAC, they don't just have access to this. They have access to everything else too, right? Because it's a fully trusted solution once it goes into the GAC. Whereas in this case, building up these operations and args allow you to very specifically say what someone can do. So for example, you could create an operation arg combination that allows you to read information from the customer relationship management system, but you can't write. Right? So now we can control what a lot of people are doing. You just can't have a fully trusted solution that runs around the enterprise doing whatever you want. So you can see, I think, when you start to look at this, that this adds burden to developers. We have to be more precise in what it is that we're trying to do, but it significantly improves the overall stability and security of the farm. Okay, so now this thing would be registered. We'd have our args, we'd have our ops, they would be registered. Now, how do we use them? Well, I went ahead and just made a simple web part to use it. And again, this is a non-visual web part, so everything we need to look at is right here in one code module. Go ahead and open that up. Most of this stuff is boring web part stuff. So here I am just making my UI. There's my create child controls, stuff we do all the time, right? The interesting stuff happens here when the go button is clicked, and we can see actually how this is invoked. So what I do when it's clicked is I come up here and get an instance of the args class. And into that, I go ahead and put in the partial last name that I want. So now I've got my arguments. And then what I do is go to SP utility and call execute registered proxy operation. And then I pass in the information about the assembly that I want to call. And then I'm going to get an object back, but I already know that this should be coming back as a list of contacts. So I go ahead and accept that list of contacts on the way out, and then I just bind it to a grid right here. Okay? So this rounds it out and shows us how it is that we can call it. Now, I think when you look at this, right, a couple of things immediately come to mind. First of all, this is kind of a late-bound system, right? So I really don't know until runtime whether or not this code I've just written is actually going to work. So the thing's got to be there. It's got to be properly registered. And oh, by the way, I hope I didn't commit any typos when I typed in that, you know, four-part name and the type name and everything else. So I think the knock on this infrastructure, which, you know, there's legitimacy to, is that this is a potentially error-prone mechanism for getting out of the sandbox because I got to type all this stuff. I mean, there are best practices I can use to, you know, make these strings constants or have them provided by the class itself or what have you. We can do all those things. But it's right to say that, you know, if you look at it and say it's potentially error prone, it's late bound, you know, I don't know till runtime whether things are going to be successful. So the good news is that this is really only one mechanism that we have to get out. It's important to understand it. I think there are times when this mechanism will be the right one. But there's currently a sort of fierce debate going on among a lot of MVPs that I communicate with is about whether or not this is the way, really, to get out of the sandbox. So I'm going to show you another way to get out of the sandbox. And let's just come back here, and we'll go to a different site. This one right here. And I'm going to show you a simple solution here. This is just a solution for printing lists, a list printing solution. So from the end user's point of view, it's pretty straightforward stuff. Here we have just a contact list, and I'm going to come up to the items, click on it. And when I do, you can see there's a big old print button here on the ribbon. So this isn't out-of-the-box functionality, right? This is something that we made. Click on the big old print button, and up pops a print view of that list. And then from the print view of the list, I can come over here, a little print icon, and bring up the print dialog. So this is pretty nice, right? And, you know, I kind of like to stop here because I think this is something everyone can understand. And I think you can see how a site collection owner who might be a business user or maybe a little bit technical, a little bit business, that kind of person, could look at that and say, you know what? A solution to print lists is something I really want in my site collection, and I don't really have to ask anybody's permission because I can just load it right into my own site collection solution gallery and make it available to my users, right? So let's look at how this thing was made as another example of how we can break out of the sandbox. And we've got to go to a different spot here. Okay, so this feature right here, you can see we've got one feature here, my main feature. Elements that are in here that we care about are primarily down here, where we have an elements.xml, and we have a print.master, and a print.aspx. So the elements.xml, not an awful lot of excitement going on here. If I open it up, we can see that what it's doing is deploying our master page, right? So this is the declarative camel necessary to put our print.master into the master page gallery. That's nice. Here is our printlist.aspx, okay, which is type ghostable, which means that this page is going to go directly into the site structure. So this is not going to go into, say, the layouts. And I should step back for just a second to say that putting pages in the layouts directory is not allowed in sandbox solutions, so you can't do that. So your answer is to put them directly into the content database using this type of module structure with camel. So this becomes essentially a page that's like all the other SharePoint pages coming out of the content database. And then this custom action element right here, this is what actually puts the button onto the ribbon. So if we scroll down here just a little bit, you'll see that we have this button and it has an action associated with it. And this action runs some JavaScript code. So when you push the button, it runs some JavaScript code. But if I scroll over, there's a bunch going on here. But the real meat of this is it does a window.open. Okay. So the key thing here is that when you hit the print list, what I'm going to do is open that window you saw, that print window, which is my ASPX page, and I'm going to pass into it information about the list you're looking at, the view you're looking at, so that I know what print view to render. Okay. So this elements just puts the pages into SharePoint and adds the button to the ribbon. Okay, the master page itself. This is really not exciting, and the reason this is really not exciting is because we're trying to remove all the Chrome, right? So this is a master page that has nothing on it. You can see how simple it is right here, and that's how we make a print view, right? We just have a master page with nothing on it. The only thing on here is my little button that calls window.print so that it brings up the print dialog, and you could even do away with that, right? You could just pop it and have the print dialog come up right away, but I have a little button to do that. The real heart of the matter is here in the ASPX page. So I want to point out a couple of things about this ASPX page. Again, it's not going into the layouts directory. It's going into the content database. So one of the things about pages in the content database is that pages in the content database do not support code behind. You can't write any code behind an ASPX page if it's in the content database. So now step back and think about the ramifications there for a second. So what I'm telling you is you can't use a layouts page, which does accept code behind. You have to use a page that goes into the content database, but you don't get code behind. So now you're wondering, what the heck good is an ASPX page if I can't have any code behind? And the answer is you'll use client-side code. So what we'll do is bring this up, and you'll see that there's no assembly associated with this page at all, as I said, no code behind. All the interesting stuff happens here inside of JavaScript. So this is the key thing. JavaScript isn't running in the sandbox, right? Neither is Silverlight. Those all run on the client. So your next best way to get out of the sandbox is to write some JavaScript code or to use Silverlight, because once you do that, you're free to make any calls you want. I can use jQuery, I can use JavaScript to call web services, I can use Silverlight to call web services. And if you think about why that's okay, once you're on the client, making those calls directly from the client, you're no longer endangering the farm. You're just endangering the client's machine, right? So if their machine acts up, that's just one, right? So you can't really hurt the farm anymore. So this is the other technique for doing it. But it's sort of a 1-2 punch. What you want to do is deploy the ASPX page sans code into the content, the SharePoint database, and then write client-side code or force the hosting of a Silverlight part to pop up in that same page. Okay, so we're interested in running this show print view, but actually I'm going to run down here to this part first. Okay, this is the placeholder main. We all know as SharePoint developers that placeholder main is the big main part of the page. This is where most of the white space is. Most of the UI, everything else around it, is mostly driven by the master page. So this is where our UI goes. And if you look inside here, I have one div called printDiv. That'll be important later. But printDiv is empty. There's nothing in printDiv. Okay. So now what I would like to do is when this page loads, I would like to just run my show print view function here to generate the print view. And if you think about it, that's just what we saw in the demo, right? Open the page and saw the print view. However, and this has nothing to do with sandbox solutions, I'm just telling you to save you a little heartache later. The way that the client object model works in JavaScript for SharePoint 2010 is that it uses a load on demand strategy so that it doesn't have to drag JavaScript files down to the client if they're not going to be used. So if you want to run some JavaScript when the page loads, then you need to call this method, execute or delay until script loaded. Then you put in the name of the function you want to call and the library where the client object model is located, which is sp.js. So what's going to happen is this code's going to run when the page loads. It's going to then respond by loading sp.js. And when the client object model is successfully downloaded and available, then show print view will run, and we'll jump up to here. So now what entails is really a short discussion of the JavaScript client object model. If you were in the pre-con, then Jan covered some of the client object model stuff there. If you're not familiar with the client object model, this is one of the most powerful things that SharePoint 2010 brings to the party. It's the ability to write code on the client that feels a lot like you're writing code on the server. So let me explain. We'll come down here inside of our function, and you can see the first part here is just me splitting up the query string. So all this code right here is just grabbing all the stuff that was being passed in. Because remember when I said when you push the button, I'm going to send over information about the list you were looking at, the view you were looking at, because that's the print view we have to generate. So that's pretty straightforward stuff. It gets interesting here. Var context equals new sp.client context and then passing in the URL of the site. sp.client context gets you a context to the site that you specify. This is the same on the client as getting a server-side sp context. Just like we need a context on the server to enter the object model, We need a context on the client to enter the object model as well. But then once you do it, you can go ahead and get the web. So here I am saying context.getWeb. This is analogous to getting the SP web object on the server. Then you can see that I say get me the lists. This is analogous to saying spweb.lists on the server. Then I go ahead and say get me a particular list by ID, which is the list ID, which is the list that you were looking at. And then I say get me the views for this list. By the way, get me a particular view. This is the view that you were looking at. And then ultimately, my goal is to call the render as HTML method for the view that you were looking at, which will return to me the HTML of the view that you were looking at. And then I can put it in my page that doesn't have any Chrome, and voila, print view. Now, what's also interesting about this, if you haven't seen it before, are these constant calls to context.load. So what's going on the client object model when you talk to webs and lists and items and fields and things like that? Well, remember, you're on the client, so you're not actually talking to anything on the server at this point. What we're doing is building up a batch of operations that we intend to subsequently pass over to the server for execution. Every single time I call load on one of these objects, it builds an operation up in the background saying, I want that object. So this is going to go over to the server and become an SP web when I tell it to. But at this point, we haven't actually gone to the server at all. Going to the server finally occurs when you call the execute query async method of the context, and then you pass in success and failure methods that should be called based on, well, success or failure. And then if we look down here at the success, we do something very simple. We find that print div I showed you earlier and set its inner HTML equal to the value of the print view HTML that came back from the call, and now you have the print view generated for you. So you can see that what we have here is the second way to get out of the sandbox is to use something that runs on the client, either Silverlight or JavaScript. And if you're going to do JavaScript or Silverlight in SharePoint 2010, you're surely using the client object model for Silverlight or JavaScript. And I think the reason that this approach gets a little bit more thumbs up than perhaps the first approach is that this feels much more like I'm doing the regular kind of programming that I like to do, right? I don't have this late-bound thing where I have giant strings of assembly information that I have to pass in. Both are valid, though. Both will work. And I think now you can see that even though you have significant restrictions on you in the sandbox, you can architect solutions that get you out of it. And I have to say, I'd really like to drive home the point that writing a sandbox solution is your first order of business. So if I were the IT pro running your SharePoint farm, I would not let you deploy a standard farm level solution to my farm unless I knew that you could not get what you wanted done by using a sandbox solution. So I think it really puts the burden on us developers to figure out the correct way to do it. And when I look at this, I think we're going to be writing a lot of Silverlight and a lot of JavaScript for SharePoint 2010. Okay, back to the slides here. The last thing I want to cover in the 15 minutes or so that we have is to talk a little bit about administration. Even though I have just a few IT pros in the room, I think it's important for the developers, too, to understand what goes on with administration here. These are the pieces of it: load balancing, validation, monitoring, resource restriction. First is load balancing. I had mentioned this briefly, but you can run the sandbox solution infrastructure in basically two modes: a local mode that says process on the web front end where the request was received. So if I get a request on box A, I'm going to load the sandbox solution right there in box A. And remote mode, which says I've got a set of servers over here in the corner, and what I want is, regardless of where the request comes in for that sandbox solution, I want you to direct it to this set of servers over here in the corner. And that's even going to give the IT pro further isolation of sandbox solutions, so you can't even bring down a web front end or anything if something behaves poorly. And you could also imagine that if you're in a hosting environment and you're hosting many, many clients, you might want to have a farm of basically sandbox solution resources that you can use and just port everything off to that. Solution monitoring, as I've said, it's really the site administrators that are responsible for uploading the solutions, and they don't need any farm permissions to do that, but the farm admins are the ones that set absolute limits on what can be done. And the way that this works is that each site collection is assigned a certain number of what are called resource points, and those resource points are allocated on a daily basis to all of the sandbox solutions that are running in that site collection. If the combination of those solutions exceeds the number of resources that are allotted on a daily basis, all of the solutions are shut down. So yes, it's true that if somebody else writes a bad solution, then your solution will get shut down too. I like to tell people it's sort of like a family cell phone plan. So you get a cell phone and your kids get one too, and then they use up all the minutes and you can't make any calls. That's the way it works, right? So everything in the site collection has to share the resources and use them together. Here's just a view of where the resources are set. I'm going to show you that in some detail here in a second. So why don't we go ahead and jump out of this and take a look at some key places in admin. So let's go to back to central admin. And the first place we're going to stop is system settings and then manage user solutions. You'll see it's right next to manage farm solutions. Managed Farm Solutions is that place that we're already all familiar with. And, oh, just to round it out there, there's my central admin link from the very beginning of the demo, right? So I pushed it into there as our second demo. And we come back to System Settings. Right next to Farm Solution Settings is Managed User Solutions. And when I click on that, we're going to see two key things that the IT Pro can do. One is the blocked solutions. So the top half of this page is blocked solutions. And basically what that means is the IT Pro can browse to any WSP package, load it here, and it will be blocked from the farm completely. So if you have a particularly bad application that we actually don't want anybody running anywhere, we can put it in here and block it. And I can sort of imagine that, as SharePoint gains popularity and becomes more and more of a platform of choice, that there's an opportunity for some not so nice people to create some free solutions for SharePoint that then end users who are site collection admins and maybe don't know better would download and put in their site collection. And then the IT pro might want to say, hey, listen, we don't want anybody running that thing, so let's put it in the block solution. Secondly, the bottom half of the page is the load balancing. These are the two options that I mentioned to you. So all sandbox code runs on the same machine as it was requested upon, or requests run the sandbox code are done by solution affinity. In other words, push it off to a set that I've got somewhere else. So pretty simple configuration here for the load balancing and the solution blocking. Okay, next place to stop. Back to central admin. Let's go to app management. And then here, under the site collections, right, because it's all site collection level, we have configure, quotas, and locks. And here we can configure a bunch of the quotas that we're familiar with, but in our discussion, we're most interested in this section right here, which specifies the sandbox solution quotas. And you can see that we're limited to 300 points per day, and then we get a warning at 100 points. So what the heck does that mean? Well, the challenge in allocating resources in this system is that resource allocation is based on many different things like CPU usage, memory usage, whether or not your app crashes. And all of those things use different units of measure, right? So how is it that you can normalize across all these different resources you want to measure and come up with some least common denominator unit that represents everything? And the answer is points. So the way that this works is that there are conversion factors that determine how much things are worth. So let's take a quick look at that by going into PowerShell. And we'll just open up good old PowerShell ISE here. And let's see, we're going to list resource measures. Okay, so this little PowerShell script right here is just going to list the resource measures for us. You can see that what I'm doing is loading Microsoft.SharePoint right here. And then what I do is just call the user code service local. This is basically the same code in PowerShell that I showed you before where you get the local user code service. And then all we're doing is looking at the resource measures and piping it to select object so that it shows me the name and the resources per point. Pretty straightforward, so we'll go ahead and run this. It runs for a second and spits out all the different resources. And now we'll scroll up here to the top and take a look at them. Okay, so this shows us everything. So the first one here, abnormal process termination count. So this means if your application should just bomb for some reason, like an unhandled error, that costs you 1 point for the day. So if you did that 300 times, you'd be done, and so would everybody else in the site collection. But there's more than that. We get CPU execution time, for example, which is 200 points here. And you'll notice that this is resources per point, resources per point. So this is getting back to what I said, which is that each one of these things has different units of measure, like maybe just count or time, right, that type of thing. And so we have to have a mechanism to convert something like milliseconds or microseconds or what have you into points, and then you can see the conversion here, 200, critical exception counts, 10, idle percent processor time, 100. You get the idea. Now, the challenge is, and you know, one of the questions developers have when they see this is they go, okay, I get all that. How many resources will my application need, and don't I need to know that before I go into this environment and just keep getting shut down? Well, it's very difficult to kind of sit back and say, you know, what does all this mean? It means that I should allocate you 50 points, right? It's really kind of hard to do that. So the right approach is to take your solution, put it in a QA environment that simulates your production environment, and then run it. And then what happens is you can go to the actual site itself. So let's go back to SharePoint here. And we'll go back to that gallery where you were on. So we'll go site settings and then the solutions gallery. And then you'll notice up here in this black box that it's actually tracking my resource quota usage. So it's telling me I have 300 points. And it's telling me what I've used today and my average in the last 14 days. So you can go into a QA environment, run your solutions, and then you can track the kind of resource usage that your solution is requiring. Now, one of the things I like to be clear about is, you know, this 300 is the default, and actually 300 is kind of generous. So sometimes, you know, we try to create solutions that bomb this out just so we can show people what it looks like when they all go down. And it's actually kind of hard to do with 300 points. So you just do this endless loop, and you have to keep doing these things over and over again to build up to 300 points. So 300 points is pretty generous. You know, a typical web part that doesn't do a lot of processing might take a point a day or something for that thing to run. So this is really quite a bit, 300. But again, you could simply put it in a QA environment and look at it and see whether or not that makes sense. Additionally, it's important to know that if they do shut down, and just generally speaking, what happens when you do that, go over here. Generally speaking, what happens when your apps go away, it depends what kind of apps they are, of course, but if they were web parts, then all these web parts would be replaced with a little message that says, you've exceeded your quota and I can't run anymore. Okay? So if that happens and you say, oh, you know, we've made a mistake in the way that we allocated, it wasn't that there's anything wrong, it's just that our limit was too tight, then the IT pro can come in here and just change the 300 points to something else, and they'll immediately come back up because they haven't exceeded their daily limit. Right, so you can just keep going like that. All right, so the key on this then is just to recognize that this is not an absolute thing, that it's a relative thing, and it's best to do some testing to figure out exactly what you need. Okay, we did the admin demo. Oh, and that's it. Hang on just a second. So I wanted to have my little agenda slide at the end where we don't have any questions anymore, right? So why do we need the sandbox solutions? The primary reason we need the sandbox solutions is to really improve farm stability. If you're in a hosting environment or you're using something like SharePoint Online, These become absolutely critical because it's impossible to manage all your customers without this. And I think that was really the genesis of this whole idea. But it's certainly something that can benefit you regardless of whether or not you're hosting or whether you're just in your own organization. What's the sandbox? We understand now what it is, all the restrictions that are on it. How does it work? We put some things in it to see how it works. And then we talked a little bit about the restrictions and how to get around it. And finally, we looked at the management at both the site collection level and at the IT pro level so that we can see how that management is sort of tiered and what each one can do. All right, well, I think we're in pretty good shape here. We're right about at the end of the session. I'll certainly hang around if there are any questions. Other than that, we're done, and thank you for coming.